Clubland Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. October 2nd. It is 3 p.m. in western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee, where the plight of millions of Americans is of no interest to the purported president and alleged vice president and their national media poodles, because they've yet to find a way to blame it on Trump. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where Sir Keir Starmer doesn't know the sex of his children, 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, where the bombs land, 10:30 p.m. in Tehran, from where the bombs are launched. Midnight 45 in Kathmandu for all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone. 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers. 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne. 7 a.m. in Auckland. And a rather more civilized hour for the kippers and kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions across the Pacific. Happy Rosh Hashanah, which has begun for those Jewish listeners east of the Greenwich Meridian. In Israel, as we noted, it is underway to the sound of Iranian missile strikes. Looks like it's going to be the way of the entirety of Rosh Hashanah. Headline of the day from the Daily Mail in London. Because nothing interesting about American politics is permitted in American newspapers. Kamala Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, forcefully slapped ex-girlfriend for flirting with another man in booze-fueled assault. This isn't the nanny he knocked up. It's some other bird. He didn't get pregnant. He just beat her up. Some second gentleman. Who's on first? Any day now. The heads of 873 U.S. intelligence agencies, if I think about it, I can name them all. I think they're all listed in the Constitution. But any day now, the heads of 873 U.S. intelligence agencies will be saying that this Doug Emhoff story is Russian misinformation. We're in that phase of the campaign. The pitiful Yank media tell us Doug Emhoff and Tim Walz are redefining masculinity. If by redefining masculinity you mean impregnating the nanny and needing two girls to beat up the other guy for you in an election debate. Okay, let us get to your questions. Keith Farrell says, is Tampon Tim now uptight, out of sight? Is that Stevie Wonder, isn't it? I love the word out of sight. which you don't hear a lot. You know who says out of sight? Me. On my record of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, I say out of sight in my best groovy 60s manner. Keith Fowle says, is Tampon Tin now uptight out of sight after his miserable performance last night? Also, what impact will Israel Helena... Is this Hurricane Helene or Helena? There's been so little news coverage, I don't think I've heard anybody pronounce it. Did those two ladies, that was a CBS news reporter. Did neither of those two ladies pronounce it last night? I'm not sure whether it's Helene or Helena. But anyway, what impact will Israel Helena have on Trump's election chances, not to mention the administration's absence from storm-hit territory? Great to have you back, says Keith. Yeah, I'm glad to be back, but I do thank Melissa and Laura for pinch-hitting. There's another great American expression, isn't it? Pinch-hitting. Although I think they use it in cricket now. I'm wondering, it's been so long since I've done this show, I've forgotten all the where you're meant to keep the central narrative thrust powerhousing on. So enough with pinch hitting in cricket. Great to have you back, says Keith. And I'll take his word for that, because by now he's probably pining for Laura or Melissa. Israel and Helena or Helene. Look, the hurricane in Katrina basically confirmed that the Bush era was over. There was basically no Bush after that. And he lost the election a couple of months later. Admittedly, it was only the midterms, and this is slightly different because it's the presidential election. And also what has changed is that America is so detached from its norms that issues like competence, particularly in terms of how the Democrats are presented in the media, no longer matter. So the fact that significant portions of two American states are cut off from the rest of the country. The fact that I think at one point there's only at one time three or four helicopters in the air. There are thousands of people still unaccounted for there. People complain they've seen, you know, this Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is supposed to be able to rush national resources to local tragedies in this kind of situation. They've said they've seen no one from FEMA. No one from FEMA has been around. All FEMA's been doing is holding fake photo ops with Kamala Harris. And at some point, usually, the reality of the incompetence kicks in and people understand that these guys are screwing the country. But that we seem to be in a different kind of era as far as that is concerned. Israel, the business between Israel and Iran is interesting. Israel, speaking of Israel's national interests, has no room for miscalculation, because miscalculation leads to what happened last October the 7th and on a bigger scale, leads to the vaporization of the entire nation. So they can't afford to miscalculate. They can't afford to do this rubbish that the likes of the UN and European governments and indeed most of the Biden administrations. It's time for a ceasefire. No, Israel has demonstrated, and I understand people have different views on this, but Israel has demonstrated in the last couple of weeks that it can do extraordinary things. The pages, basically getting inside the pages of thousands of Hezbollah operatives, and I know people say, oh, but this is such as these are austere religious scholars, or however the Washington Post is spinning it. Yeah, well, they You should have thought about that before getting mixed up with his baller. They've done the, but they're all the time they're being accused of genocide against random civilians, and in fact they're going to extraordinary lengths to micro-target their enemies to the point where they're in the guy's trouser pocket. That's how micro-targeted it is. And actually how micro he is. If he didn't pick it up on the first ring, so it blew off his hand and left it in his pocket till the third ring, and it blew off something that these excitable Mohammedan lads are far more twitchy about losing. So they've done a terrific job. And then, you know, killing the head guy of Hezbollah and then killing the guy who succeeded him the following day. This is brilliant stuff. Absolutely brilliant. It's a brilliant micro campaign up against a macro campaign. Because the reality is, as anyone who knows who's been to the West Bank or Gaza, is these guys just hate Jews. And they mean it, from the river to the sea. From the river to the sea, Jew-free. They don't mean the Jew. The Jews can be in the sea. They don't mind if they're in the water and they just float off somewhere. But their preference, it's the difference between a mass psychosis versus people who are micro-targeting their opposition to it. I don't think it will play unless it actually turns into World War III. And I do believe we're not in August 1914 quite yet, but we're in mid-July 1914. And between the various wars going on over the map, World War III could be here, and at some point, then foreign policy comes into play in an American election. But one of the things I liked about J.D. Vance last night, I thought was very clever, actually. He basically internalized the fact that the questions are all bollocks. So if you take the questions as framed by those awful, awful, awful non-moderators, they're all framed from the leftist perspective. So we had, whatever it was, 45 minutes on childcare, because as all you constitution waivers know, one of the adumbrated powers of the executive branch is that the president has sole responsibility for childcare across the republic. What he did that was very clever, J.D. Vance, the big issue here, look, the big issue for Americans is you're losing your country, right? So, suddenly 30% of the population of Springfield, Ohio is Haitian. They've been given, and as those wanker moderators said, oh, but no, they're not illegal. No, they're not illegal. Not because they went through the bollocks that I had to go through, where you apply for a green card and go through the hell of US immigration. The only reason they're quote unquote legal is because these idiot Democrats, basically the executive branch just signs a thing legalizing people without having to go through what I had to go through. So they've got temporary protected status, and temporary in American translates into English as permanent. So they're not going to be going anywhere. So Springfield, Ohio is going to be a Haitian town in perpetuity. This is the point. The one issue that matters is that America is turning into the third world. And you can see that in every American city, and actually in a lot of smaller towns as well, where the habits of Latin America have taken hold. And J.D. Vance knew, oh, I'm not going to get any questions. You know, I'm not going to get any questions about that, because the only questions about immigration are about, what do we need to do to get comprehensive immigration reform, which is wanker talk. Comprehensive immigration reform for legalizing the express check-in. So you won't be able to complain about guys coming across the Rio Grande and just walking in and being settled at your expense in hotels and all the rest of it, you won't be able to complain about that because these snippy CBS moderators, whatever her name is, Sour Puss McShrew Harpy or whatever she's called, will be able to say, oh, I have to fact check you there, Senator, because in fact they're legal, because we've legalized illegality. And the thing about that is that J.D. Vance was brilliant at bringing the migrant issue into everything, because it affects everything. It affects your hospitals, it affects your schools, it affects the prices of houses you buy, it impacts your ability to go to some town in the next state and stay in a mid-price chain hotel. It affects whether or not your kid gets stabbed or run over on the way to school. So it affects everything. And he was brilliant at bringing, at basically saying, I'm not going to wait and I'm not going to take seriously the framing of the question. Again, the tragedy in North Carolina and Tennessee, which is a tragedy of a failed government, because we're now getting on to whatever it is, 5 days, 6 days since the thing hit, the failure of an incompetent government to do its job, which is supposed to be directed toward its own people. And instead, like this guy Mayorkas says, oh, we've got no money. We've got no money to spend on you losers in loser states. We don't care about you Appalachians. Appalachian is the one nationality that we don't blow billions of dollars on. So the fact that the flooding in North Carolina and Tennessee only came up as an example of climate change, he knew all that. And he was very careful to he was just brilliant at staying on message about what's really causing this, which is that America's turning into the third world before your eyes. And that means they're never going to go back to the Constitution, because if you think all these millions of people Biden's led into the country are coming here because it's a proposition nation and they love all this stuff in the Constitution. Yeah, maybe. The guy who stands in line and waits 10 years to bring his foreign bride into America. Maybe that guy takes the Constitution seriously. But why would he take the basic law, which is what a Constitution is, the foundational law, why would he take that seriously when your first encounter with the nation is entirely illegal and you just walk in and start living off welfare? He was brilliant at always bringing it back to the key points. You become a third world country, you'll die as a third world crap hole. And if you're indifferent to that question because you believe all this hooey about nation of immigrants and give us your poor and your huddled and whatnot, you deserve what's about to happen to you. Gary Alexander says, I agree with you on the snarky cat ladies fact-checking Vance and then muting him while focusing on mostly vapid questions. The dogs that didn't bark were their silence on the $35 trillion national debt, or World War III looming in Russia, Ukraine, China, Iran, or the port strike in the midst of a hurricane. Yeah, it's fantastic to have longshoremen in the news all the time. Longshoremen, it's like watching Elia Kazan on the waterfront 24/7. But the fact is, great word, longshoremen, but it's right up there with stevedores. I'm rambling again. Speaking of which, Dear Helene was, of course, caused by global climate change. And Tim Walz referred in his non-answer to his state's farmers facing a 500-year drought 1 year and a 500-year flood the next. Just to rehearse the bidding, we had 500-year floods in 1993, 2013, and 2015. So 500 years happens faster than ever these days. Yeah, you'd be surprised. If you, if you've waited ages for the next half millennium, don't worry, there'll be another along in a minute. But for droughts, it seems to me the Dust Bowl was a tad worse than anything we've seen recently. Do these fools ever crack a book, a history book? You don't have to crack a history book. You could actually read a novel, Grapes of Wrath. I think that's where I learned about the Dust Bowl when I was a teenager. But then I didn't go to an American school. And to hear Tim Walz, Trump put out that great meme, Obama, thinking, I need a VP dumber than myself. And then Biden saying, I need a VP dumber than myself. And then Kamala saying, I need a VP dumber than myself. And then Tim Walz. These are morons. Tim Walz is a moron. It's like him. I don't know how Americans aren't embarrassed. He gets a question about Tiananmen Square, and he starts talking about bicycling round his small town until the streetlights come on. Why are Americans not embarrassed by this? You know, that you've sufficient, there's only two parties. There's only two parties. And the needs of whoever's really running the country are such now that only total, you know, Biden, at least in his heyday, before he lost his mind, was, as John O'Sullivan said on the Mark Stein show a couple of years ago, a nasty son of a bitch. This guy, a nasty son of a bitch. And he's quite right. He's quite right. When Joe Biden was put on the path to glory, he wasn't a moron. He was a nasty son of a bitch, but he wasn't a moron. Tim Walz is nasty and a son of a bitch, but he's actually an idiot. He was put on a presidential ticket without any vetting. Any serious vetting. So you have a guy up there who's having to talk about big picture, domestic policy and foreign. How can you ask Tim Walz a question about the $35 trillion national debt? Oh, I'm proud to say that back when the national debt was just $4 trillion, I was bicycling around Nebraska. It's embarrassing. And I know, you know, the whole point. I mentioned this to a lady I was talking to at Hillsdale just before or after my speech. I was saying when Obama won the election, my kid's piano teacher, who was putting on their traditional Christmas concert, or it's probably a holiday concert, was told, decided to switch it in honor of Obama's election and have all the kids singing 19th century Negro spirituals. This is like the second whitest state in the nation or whatever it is. The only diversity in New Hampshire is my kids being Canadian. That's the only diversity in the state. So, and that's of no interest to anyone, not a single person. When they go, today is Celebrate Diversity Day, they never said to, why don't you come up and talk about what it's like in Quebec or anything like that. They never said that. So the kids have to sing all these 19th century spirituals, and it goes about as well as you would expect. And I'm thinking, if this doesn't end soon, I've got to get out of here. And I came out and I discovered that a car had parked in front of us, and the car had a bumper sticker saying, "I think, therefore I'm Democrat." Mm-hmm. You think, therefore you're Democrat. And yet somehow you've wound up with Kamala, who is half the age of Biden with half the marbles, and you've wound up with Tim Walz, who's actually, he's the same age as Kamala, but he looks like her grandpa for some reason. And he's got even fewer marbles. There's something wrong. And if you vote, these people should, neither of these people. And again, as Ann Coulter pointed out, it's because Kamala is a diversity hire. She's there because she's a black woman or a brown woman or a half black, half brown woman. Anyway, you know, she's a Montreal schoolgirl and a British subject, and it's always good to cheer on a Commonwealth cousin of mine. But the reality is that she should be nowhere near a national ticket, and Tim Walz should be nowhere near a national ticket. And it tells you, yet again, if these guys win, that we're in for another 4 years in which you have no idea who's making the decisions of the supposedly lone hyperpower. Just, it's ludicrous that this is, obviously Biden was out of it, but Biden didn't campaign. He just sat in his basement and came out every few weeks for a rally in which various of his staffers sat in a dozen parked cars distributed around the parking lot. And not until, you know, whatever it was, 2 months ago, did people finally fess up to the fact that he's so out of it, he cannot possibly have been running the government. Well, then, who was running the government these last 4 years? Was it Kamala? No, nobody thinks that. You listen to Kamala talk about the economy. She doesn't know what an economy is. And she defaults. This guy, Walz, defaults. I'm proud to say I grew up in small town Nebraska riding my bicycle. And Kamala talks about defaults to cooking. You know, because when you're running for president, defaulting to whatever she did last time round, smoking pot while listening to Tupac. wasn't a lot of that going on in Montreal, actually. Not at Westmount High School. It's all, look, here's the thing. Everything, the reason I loved Trump in 2015 was because I'd wearied after however long I'd spent in New Hampshire. I wearied of all the bollocks. It's amusing at first, you know, that everything is super plastic, super fake. And I'm not making a bipartisan point here. I'm just like Lamar Alexander, you know, he jets in to campaign in New Hampshire. He's a Republican. And as the plane's circling to come into Manchester Airport, they all change out of their Brooks Brothers suits and wingtips and put on the best pressed plaid jackets anyone's ever seen. Because the rubes fall for that every time, they think. And it was so great to have Trump not just bother with any of that. But as I said, I think I said it earlier today, you know, at least the fakey fakeness used to have a professional gleam about it, like a slick Broadway musical that has no heart. It's still professional. It doesn't touch you. It doesn't move you, but it's still professionally done. This, they're laughing at us, putting up these two boobs who shouldn't be anywhere near a president. I don't think he should have been. I gather from Minnesotans that he couldn't win his own congressional district, and he figured that out, which is why he ran for governor. But these are, if you vote for these guys, I think, therefore, I'm Democrat. Okay, well, then think about this. These are serious times at home and abroad. And if you vote for these morons, your country is going to die. And I don't deserve that to happen. Most of our listeners don't deserve that to happen. But you guys who think what's important is to elect the first Montreal schoolgirl ditz as president, and some psychologically really creepy, weird guy harboring a dark secret we do not yet know, have him as the next in line. Well, you deserve for your country to die, and you deserve to be the first dragged off the cliff with these two bozos. Okay, I'm getting overexcited again. William says, it seems Walz was in Nebraska, not Hong Kong. during the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. He does like to embellish his resume. Yeah, I think he, in even though he looks like a 112, I'm no one to talk. I've aged half a century in the last 2 years. But the even though he looks so ancient, apparently during the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre, he was riding his bicycle around this town in small town Nebraska. I think this is what they there's a name for this syndrome. What is it called? Leading man syndrome or central protagonist syndrome or something like that, where insecure men in particular need to insert themselves at the center of events. So it's not enough for him just to be aware of what happened in Tiananmen Square. He had to be there. He had to be there. He had to be central to the event. Biden had a touch of this when he did that bit I did on Tucker, where I'm proud to say I parachuted into Afghanistan to pin the presidential medal or whatever on that guy's chest. And this 12-star general said to me, "You can't go in there, sir. It's too dangerous." And I said, "No, I'm a Biden. You got the word of a Biden that a Biden does what a Biden has to do." This whole thing of having to, and he, you know, Biden has at least been in politics for, you know, over half. He's been in Washington for over half a century. So there's a sporting chance when he talks about some long dead foreign leader that he actually did meet them once in 1973. Whereas with this guy, it's the vainglorious self-aggrandizing. That's how he got into trouble with this thing about being a friend of school shooters. I think he was just doing his usual thing of saying, "Oh, I'm at the center of the event." When some mad kid brings his weaponry to school and guns down everybody. Yeah, I was right there in the class next to him. And I befriended that guy because I believe in reaching across the aisle. I can work with school shooters. Anyway, I'm getting... he does like to embellish his resume. Steve from Manhattan, our favourite Montenegrin brigand and also our favourite DC Superior Court doorman. He was very helpful to smoothing my progress, as it were, through that courthouse. Steve from Manhattan says, "In last night's US Veep debate, Governor Tim Walz was asked whether he had lied when he claimed to have been in China during the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989, rather than back in Nebraska, where records indicate he was at the time. Governor Walz's answer began, 'I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on. And I'm proud of that service.' Yeah, he's carried bicycles in combat, unlike you, Steve from Manhattan. My question for you, did you ride your bike on the Toronto streets growing up? And if so, looking back, are you proud of that service? Like Governor Walz. Yeah, I'm proud to have served as a grade school bicyclist. Thank you for your service. They also serve who sit and pedal." I'm not sure I even believe that anecdote. That might just be this week's lie to substitute for last week's Tiananmen lie. Because in my corner of the world, for what it's worth, towns with under 400 people don't generally have streetlights. Or if they do, they've got two of them. So it's too few to notice when they come on. You know, if ever there was a moment for a real fact check from the quote-unquote moderators, it was then. Why didn't that CBS gal, Sapus McShrew Harpy, or whatever her name is, say, "Hang on, America's dad, I asked you about Tiananmen Square, which, according to our research department, isn't in rural Nebraska." Yeah, this is what he's reduced to now. I'm proud to have completed toilet training before I turned 8. What about this business about Tiananmen Square? Yeah, I'm proud to have stopped wearing diapers before I was 12. This is, as I said, if you vote for these guys, you deserve everything that's going to happen to you. Robert Orr from Ottawa says, Mark, as we approach the first anniversary of Hamas's assault on Israel, it occurs to me that October the 7th is another anniversary. Lepanto, October the 5th. 1571. That's the Battle of Lepanto. It's about the defeat of, what was he called? Ali Pasha. Ali Pasha and his fleet of Muslims by the Christians. Did Hamas choose this deliberately, asks Robert. After all, there was a good 9/11 on September 11th, 1683. Yeah, I mentioned that at the time. That's obviously Gates of Vienna and the Winged Hussars of the Poles. This actually should come up. This actually should come up with Tim Walz. And Robert goes, one of G.K. Chesterton's best-known poems is Lepanto. Maybe Mark could read it to commemorate the anniversary. Well, that's not a bad idea, Robert, but I'm not going to do it now because if memory serves, Chesterton's poem is metrically irregular. And I wouldn't want to just wing that. It requires a little bit of thought. But I'll certainly bear it in mind. Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A. As you know, the music has been moved to the weekend so that we can focus on who's up 2 points in Pennsylvania. And don't miss Saturday's show. Here's a chap called Mark Stein to tell you all about it. Hey, this is Mark Stein, back with another hour of Songs Across the Century, songs around the world, from the continent and from the Commonwealth, from Sinatra and from Sade. And the composer of the Pajama Game joins me to recreate a grand moment from that Broadway blockbuster. On the Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. Yeah, and 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe or 12 midday North American Eastern. Mark Stein live around the planet. It is 24 to 4 Eastern time. That's 24 to 9 British summer time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. If you would like a break from Who's Up 2 points in Pennsylvania, don't forget a brand new Tale for Our Time coming up this Friday, right here at Stein Online at sort of about 7 p.m. Eastern time. Let's get back to your questions because we've got a scintillating bunch today. Scott Scherzer writes from Miami Beach. It's so nice to have you back. Oh, there's no music on the show, so Scott's now providing it. Hello, Marky. Well, hello, Marky. It's so nice to have you back where you belong. I started that in all the wrong key. As the rest of the West seems okay with heading into oblivion while tucked into the fetal position, it was oh so heartening to see Israel show that there's still some fight left in our civilization. Benjamin Netanyahu has decided to ignore the supposed Middle East experts who drone on and on about appeasing the terrorists and decided that killing them is the far better alternative. As we enter Judaism's high holy days, it is difficult to ignore the possibility that a higher power might have decided to throw his weight around and set things straight. Do you think that Israel has set a proper example for the rest of its so-called allies to follow, or will the Jewish state remain a solitary pillar of hope, asked Scott. Well, I wasn't the subject of my talk at Hillsdale, but I was asked a question about it at the end of my remarks. And the point I made was, you know, is what Hamas did on October the 7th, part of what's going on in Europe and what's going on in North America and what's going on in Australia and elsewhere. So in other words, is seizing young ladies at some sort of peace and love pop concert and taking them back to Gaza and brutally raping them, killing them, parading their bodies around town, is that part of the same planet-wide psychosis as stabbing little schoolgirls in Annecy, that town in eastern France that that Ava and I have talked about from time to time? Is a part of the, and indeed in France, the poor boxing, teenage boxing champion, 17 years old in Normandy, stabbed by an Algerian migrant. I think it is part of the same psychosis. You know, Islam hates the other and is determined to dominate and destroy the other. And there's no point pussyfooting around about that. That in Europe, it's Muslims versus post-Christian secularists. In Nigeria, it's Muslims versus Christians. In southern Thailand, it's Muslims versus Buddhists. In Bali, it's Muslims versus Australian backpackers. In Russia, it's Muslims versus ethnic Russian Orthodox types. And in the Holy Land, it's Muslims versus Jews. I happen to think that's part of the, they're all part of the same problem here. I understand that young people in the West do not. And I regret that. I also understand that that's one of the reasons why, for example, the strongest supporters of Israel in the West, which were American evangelicals, have now all drifted to the default position of why do these Jews cause all the trouble? But I happen to think they're part of the it's all part of the same issue, with far less wiggle room for them. And I think that's actually that's the way to look at it. I also think, just to be blunt about it, there's something like 58 member states of the Organization for Islamic Cooperation. They're the biggest voting bloc at the UN, because, you know, there are as many Commonwealth members. In both cases, it's just a little shy of two-thirds of all the sovereign states on Earth. But the difference is that the Commonwealth countries don't vote as a bloc. These guys vote in lockstep as a bloc. I think that's enough, actually, 58 Muslim countries. I don't think they need a 59th. And the two-state solution will only be rewarding these guys with an interim stage. They've had 30 years since Oslo, and they have done nothing to build anything resembling us. The comparison I always make is with the Irish Free State in 1922. They were often violent and unlikable militant Republicans with a lot of blood on their hands. But once the Irish Free State was running, they said, oh, okay, after they got that ridiculous civil war out of the way, they said, oh, yeah, okay, now I'm going to ease up on the old bloodletting for a while because they've asked me to see if I can handle reform of the post office. You know, they got on and started doing their country. There's none of that. There's nothing good going to happen. The position for Israel has very few friends in the world right now, because Scott's theory that it's a little sliver of civilization in a wasteland of barbarism is not how increasingly European governments and US and Canadian governments see it. So if you're in Netanyahu's shoes, however bad a press you're getting right now, you're going to get a worse press if you leave it another 2, 3, 5 years. In the end, it's not about, you know, it's not about getting, as one of, we've got Stein Online team members in Israel right now, and as one of the, I said to, overhearing some nutty thing about the rules of engagement, oh, you have to give Hamas, the government of Gaza, a heads up if you're planning on bombing anything there. And I said, why? That's one reason why we all lost in Afghanistan, that kind, those kind of rules of engagement. I said, why are they doing that? And he goes, oh, well, I think it's, they're hoping it, they might get some non-hostile coverage on the BBC. You know, that hobbled them a lot. And in the end, it's about survival. Do you want to survive? Or as the price for getting a favourable review in The Guardian, do you want to actually extinguish your people and your nation? Elisa Angel says, doesn't it show the power of the media that they can simply mute the mics of the vice presidential candidates when they were speaking? Isn't it the perfect example of censorship? Yeah, and this is very, it wasn't just that the fact checks were all wrong. It's that I can't believe this woman, whatever she's called, Sourpuss McShrew Harpy or whatever. I can't remember her name. And there's no reason why I should remember her name, actually, because I'm just a niche Canadian. But in the days when I used to guest host for Hannity and Tucker at Fox, I used to get numbers that were higher than whatever this gal's name is. And when I used to host Rush, I used to get many times the numbers of what this gal says. So I don't even, you know, the Republicans go along with this every time. And they're getting more brazen, these quote-unquote moderators. Now you've got people who've said Trump is Hitler, you know, a week before the debate, and they're still allowed to host the debate. Look, they're nobody. These people are nobody. Walter Cronkite had just shy of 30 million viewers in the 70s for the CBS Evening News. And whichever tosspot hosts it now draws under 5 million viewers in a nation that's a third of a billion, right? Third of a billion. I must have mentioned this before, but I remember years ago doing a TV show on BBC One. And there was quite a lot of pressure at that time for about getting big numbers. And we were all a bit worried about it. And the director says, I don't think we need to be so worried. I'm confident we can get 18 million on this. And that's in a country that at that time had a little over 50 million people. So you're talking breezily about getting a third of the population. And then, you know, the next day when the numbers came in, it was only 16 million. And we were all devastated. Well, 16 million is over three times the audience that this no-name news anchor gets on the CBS Evening News or whatever it is. And that's in a country of getting up to 350 million people. These people aren't anybody. Why do the Republicans react as if these are still big shots as they were with, you know, I didn't like these guys either. Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, and who was the other one? Tom Brokaw, which was really the last generation who were anybody. And so I think something was off about what they were doing last night. And it was interesting that all these focus groups that people like Frank Luntz run, these guys not only thought Vance had won, but they disliked the arrogance of these no-name nobodies getting, under 5 million viewers in a nation of 350 million viewers, 350 million potential viewers. You know, why pretend that this Sourpuss McShrew Harpy, or whatever she's called, why pretend that she's Walter Cronkite? What's to gain by that? Vance handled them perfectly. He was polite to them and all the rest of it. But that moment where she fact-checks him, and she only fact-checks one guy. It's the usual thing. Oh, we're going to have fact-checking. Dan Rather was furious that they'd agreed to a deal with no fact-checking, and he was tweeting about it. I served CBS News bicycling my bicycle around the CBS newsroom until they turned the lights out for 45 years. And it's a complete betrayal to say you can't have fact-checking and all the rest. I'm doing my rambling again, but I'll make this point too. I couldn't get over, first time I saw Dan Rather on TV, I guess, you know, must have been in the 80s. I couldn't get over how bad he was. How you can, I serve CBS News for 45 years and I still can't read a teleprompter like a human being. I couldn't get over the way these guys, who were rubbish, were able to hold down these lucrative gigs for decades. But, you know, even if you were in third place like Dan was, he tanked Cronkite's ratings and they still let him serve out another 30 years, tanking them even more. But they were nothing like what they are now. Why pretend? Why treat those awful people last night as if they're Cronkite or even Rather? I mean, it's pathetic. They should, every year, every election, people say this, and come the next election, they do it all over again. Eric Dale says, Mark and fellow club members, did anyone hear any questions about the growing BRICS situation? Those gals couldn't tell you what BRICS was. Tampon Tim couldn't tell you what BRICS is, not was. It'd be better for America if it was, but it's is. I would think, says Eric, that the possible loss of the US dollar as the world's reserve currency would be a topic we should discuss, as the purchasing power of the dollar affects everyone in the country. Moreover, where's the discussion on how to end the war in Ukraine without getting us into a nuclear war? Abortion rights don't really matter as much in the post-apocalyptic wastelands, but maybe I'm wrong about that. I think you are. I think a nuclear war is one big instant society-wide abortion. That's it. The whole point about Roe versus Wade is that it was an attempt to impose a one-size-fits-all abortion policy on 50 states. And that should never have happened. It was bad law. I remember my dear friend Naomi Wolf, back when she was still semi-sorter on the left, we had a discussion on that. I can't remember whether it was that Fox show that used to precede Tucker, or maybe it was on GB News, but Naomi was on and she was talking about this. She said, well, yes, I'm opposed to banning abortion, etc. I favour abortion in certain circumstances, but I always thought, she said, that Roe versus Wade is bad law, and she's quite right about that. And that's all that happened, is that the judges said this is not. A valid law for the national government. This belongs to the states. And the fact is that in California, there's a whole lot of people wanting to abort all their kids up to 9 months. And then if you go to certain other states, particularly rural states, there isn't. And that is for the people of those states ultimately to reach their dispositions on. And again, I slightly, the point, the fact of the matter is this, that's more or less the position. You know, you remember the way the Democrats used to, John Kerry when asked about abortion, said, well, obviously, as a devout and observant Catholic, I'm passionately, personally, totally personally, passionately opposed to abortion. But I would never let my most dearly held personal, passionate principles interfere with the public policy I will enact as president. And people bought that rubbish with respect to Democrats, and now it's flipped. And Republicans ought to say, I'm opposed to abortion. I think abortion is the death of a child, and I will campaign against it as with every fibre of my being. But in fact, that's not what the repeal of Roe versus Wade is about. The repeal of Roe versus Wade said, look, there are 50 supposedly sovereign states in this republic, and they all have the right to for their people to decide which abortion policy those guys wish to put in its place. But a national, I'm waving the Constitution here because it doesn't seem to enumerate abortion as one of the federal government's powers. It's even an irrelevance. And again, society is now totally moronized. You know, you saw it with the Montreal schoolgirl and America's dad in the last couple of weeks. It's now it's totally moronized, and half the population are enjoying the moron side of it. But in the end, you know, the things we were talking about earlier, $35 trillion in federal debt. When the dollar dies, nobody's going to care about abortion because they're going to be killing each other on the street, right? It'll be good to be like Tim Walz and be a friend of shooters, because there's going to be shooters everywhere. So if they're all going, oh, look, there's Tim. Hi, Tim. Come over here. Great to see you. That'll be useful in helping you survive what's coming. A country cannot live with this moronic level of public discourse and expect to survive. It's completely preposterous. Georges Pazin, as I like to call him, because I always assume he's Quebecois, but in fact his name is George Pazin. He says, hi, Mark, you looked and sounded strong in the recent Hillsdale speech. Regardless of how you feel, I'm happy to see that. The recent scathing report on the Trump assassination attempt, the first one, not the more recent one, or any ensuing ones. Actually, I think J.D. Vance may have made... Trump's odds of getting through to mid-November a little better, because these guys, and by that I mean these shooters and the Secret Service, do not want J.D. Vance succeeding to the top of the ticket. The first report, says Georges, went over about as well as the Durham report. Oh, sorry, I didn't do that right, did I? The Durham Report! I should really have Jane Birkin on hand to do all her heavy breathing. Oh, the Durham Report. As well as the Durham... I've interrupted George's note now with all the heavy breathing, and I can't... find the rest of it. It went over about as well as the Durham report and had about as much of a lasting impact. My question is, how will things ever change when the media has such control over the dialogue? I may ignore them, and I do, but judging by those around me, they still hold some sort of mystical thrall over far too many. How can we overcome that? Well, I do think you have to stop playing along. You know, these guys last night broke the deal they had with the parties, and that ought to count for something. They should say, no, CBS News, we're not doing anything with you. Trump just turned down CBS News, 60 Minutes, because 60 Minutes, every so often when he was president, he'd agree to go on 60 Minutes, and you should never go on 60 Minutes. I was interviewed for 60 Minutes during the... What was it? I think it might be the 1987 UK election. by CBS News. They came round to interview me from their London bureau. And so this producer interviewed me. And, he interviewed me for half an hour or whatever it was. And then they took like 7 words of mine, chopped them all up, edited them up into incoherence, and edited Mike Wallace into interviewing me. And my aunt and uncle, who were watching in Toronto, said, "Oh, that must have been a big thrill for you being interviewed by Mike Wallace." And in fact, we were, you know, whatever it was, 4,000 miles apart. The whole thing is, and Trump has been stitched up by 60 Minutes. I'm rambling. It's because I haven't done the show in a few weeks. I've forgotten how to stay on track. But Trump has, I mean, they've always been lousy, but it's so brazen now. And Trump has said quite rightly, "Oh, you want to be Little Miss Fact Checker? Well, why don't you apologize for getting it wrong when you said that Hunter Biden's laptop was fake news? Because the government of the United States that you're trying to re-elect CBS has since confirmed that it is authentic and was not the work of Russian disinformation." OK, so I get that you're just phony baloney partisan hacks. But even phony baloney partisan hacks have to have some kind of relative proximity to reality, and you guys don't. So up yours. Tick, 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 tick. Kaboom to you guys. And people have to do that. Now, the problem is only Trump can break through by doing something like that. But the question is, you know, it's not going to... At some point, and again, it was a brilliant point J.D. Vance made, it's not democracy that is on the ballot, or not in the sense they mean. I mean, democracy is on the ballot, as he said, because of censorship, because increasingly we have a cartel of woke billionaires who control the world's dominant sources of information. And those woke billionaires, with two exceptions, the Elon Musk and the guy who's in prison in France, but those with a couple of exceptions, we are moving into a dark age for freedom of speech. And we are, this guy, Tampon Tim, for example, is basically interested, as Keir Starmer is, as Justin Trudeau is, in criminalizing political differences. You're doing what one-party states in Africa used to do, and Latin America in the 60s and 70s. You're criminalizing anyone minded to disagree with you. And he was quite right to say that people who are climate deniers, like when the idiot moderators last night could only talk about what's happening in Tennessee? What's happening in Tennessee and North Carolina is that we now have big government on a scale no one ever contemplated before. They purport to be able to control everything. They purport to be able to do everything. They purport to be able to seed clouds with stuff that'll deflect the rays of the sun, changing the climate or whatever. Yeah, I read Stephen McIntyre's very interesting tweet on the subject, in which he points out, when he looks at the map of areas that were devastated, we're talking about what's it called, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the TVA. In fact, when that was created and the dams that were built, those areas have been largely unaffected. It was this corner, according to Steve McIntyre, where there was local opposition to building the dams, and so the river's natural flow was left to take its course, where the worst devastation occurred. Now, he's done that. He hasn't just said, oh, these hurricanes are getting worse. It's all the climate change. The wind is getting worse. The days where it's partly cloudy and 53 degrees are getting worse. He didn't do any of that bollocks like the CBS gals last night. He actually is a statistical guy, so he actually looked at the maps of the region, those that were impacted and those that weren't so impacted, and he pointed out that it was the you know, the tree huggers of the day who objected to the dams, and however many decades later, they're the ones now under water. Toby Pilling says, why would it not be in the public interest to reveal a secret about the shape, quote unquote, of Keir Starmer's family? This is all in reference to what's going on with this rather curious fellow who, again, as with Tim Walz, I mean, Tim Walz, as I said, the problem with saying I'm friends with school shooters is because once he said it, you think, oh, yeah, come to think about it, he does look like a mass shooter. He looks like the kind of chap who would be friends with school shooters. That's why I say he's harbouring some dark secret. Now, Keir Starmer presents more normally, but he is also harbouring some secret. And the fact that his benefactor, Lord Alley, who is a gay Muslim, that's right, you heard that right, a gay Muslim that Labour put in the House of Lords, he's enormously wealthy. He picks out Sir Keir's wife's clothes. So Lady Starmer is dressed by this gay guy. Now, I'm not saying he's a French couturier or anything. He's just some Muslim, gay Muslim money bags. But for some reason, Sir Keir lets him dress Lady Starmer, which is weird. It's like what they now call, in a slightly inaccurate use of the word, it makes him a cuck. And people were calling him Sir Cuck Starmer. And then it turns out that he's lived with the gay Muslim pair at various points. So you can sort of see where this is heading. The fact of the matter is, again, as like I said the other day, you know, Justin Trudeau having his gay meltdown. And again, I don't know why it all comes down to this, but Justin Trudeau had his gay meltdown in the House of Commons in Ottawa. And Macron, when he was being asked about that rather weird bodyguard of his, look, he is not my lover, okay? And no, he just blurted that out. And now we have this business with Keir Starmer. Then we have Kamala Harris's husband, the second gentleman, a preposterous title, particularly for a guy who seems to enjoy impregnating women and then forcing them to have an abortion, or just beating them up as he did with this other woman or whatever. Their dependence, like Keir Starmer is, I'm not going to say the line I would have said, because this is a family-friendly show, but he's a dependent of this Lord Alley guy. And what we don't, and that's the vibe they all give off, these Western, Tim Walz is not his own man. Keir Starmer is not his own man. Emmanuel Macron is not his own man. So whose man are they? Chris Davis. We probably have to make this the last one. Mark, welcome back to the... Oh, this is on the same theme. Your monologue at Hillsdale College was vintage style. It wasn't really. That's kind of you to say so. But dare I say it, and it may have been a good camera angle, but you looked relatively well. We pray for continued improvement. Actually, I always look quite good when Hillsdale are filming it. It's the students who film it, generally. Certainly at the college. And they are... it was interesting when I did my little thing on songs from musicals a couple of months back, that the angle I had, I was wiped out and I paid no attention, took no part in any of that. But the angles they chose and generally their shots were better than they were on a GB News, I'll say that. Chris said, as even the most ignorant observer could see, that Vance handed Waltz his backside last night, my thoughts turned to the travails of Sir Keir Starmer. Is it any surprise that the mutton-headed, leaden-footed automaton has proved to be even more capable than Boris Johnson of accepting freebies and, quote-unquote, allegedly fathering at least one child outside of wedlock? I'm not convinced it will bring him down, but fair to say that Labour's majority currently looks a mile wide and an inch deep, with a culture of entitled freeloading endemic. Chris, that's true. The problem is that we just have rotating entitled freeloaders in many functioning, once functioning Western democracies. And the citizens, as they've just demonstrated in Austria and Thuringia and Germany and the Netherlands and Italy, keep saying, no, 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 no. We're not interested in just Tweedle freeloader and Tweedle entitled freeloader rotating in perpetuity. We want to be able to vote for somebody who's going to be permitted to change something. And as long as that, you know, these are a country with $35 trillion in federal debt is a country on its deathbed. So you only are, as long as you're not interested in even bringing that up at your lousy presidential debate moderated by two know-nothings, when you're not even talking about, you're not even talking about this playing chicken or whatever they call it with the Kremlin on nuclear war, when none of these things even come up, and you just let that $35 trillion sit out there. And I've said, by the way, read the Third World War. I would bet that America's nukes don't work when they decide to fire the big one. I would bet they don't, because nothing works. And you saw what all the equipment did, the fancy smart bombs did in Afghanistan, absent any coherent strategy from the world's worst chiefs of staff. So I'm not persuaded that nuclear... Everyone seems to bring it on, Vlad. We'll clean your clock. Yeah, yeah, right. The way Tim Walz cleaned J.D. Vance's clog. No, when you got $35 trillion and you don't even talk, you're dying. You've got a terminal disease. You know, so the $35 trillion just ticks up to $40 trillion and then $50 trillion and then $100 trillion. But at some point, they're going to pull the plug. The world, the BRICS guys are building the post-dollar regime in front of your eyes, and they're getting more and more countries to it. And, oh, yeah, I'm not really interested in it. Can we go back to talking about childcare? Or what about January the 6th? I think, you know, we ought to talk about how our democracy is at risk. Your democracy is at risk because you're going to go off the cliff and you're going to wake up and your 401k will be worth $7.28 in purchasing power, you know. So as long as you're not talking about it, so we don't know whether America's got 2 years to live or 3 months to live, but it's coming. And if you've got I thank J.D. Vance for bringing it back to the big picture. The two themes he hit on, censorship, that's people like that. Well, who is that ditz who can't get more than 5 million people to watch her crappy news show? Who is she to be unplugging presidential candidates? It's ludicrous. And who is she to say, oh, unfortunately, I have to mute your microphone, Senator, because we're about to do 45 minutes on childcare as adumbrated in the Constitution. Yeah. That's great. So we don't know. 2 years to live, 3 months to live. But it's coming. That may be the cheeriest note we have ever ended on. But we are, alas, coming to an end. I'm sorry, I've been a bit all over the map today. That's what happens when I'm away for a couple of weeks. My sense of narrative thrust absolutely disappears. It's been great being with you, though. Stick with Stein Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen Cohen will round up the internet as only she can. And don't forget our new Tale for Our Time coming up on Friday. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in. The water's fine. And don't forget, for the Stein shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.